And now the game where we ask people who've spent their lives becoming experts in one area, we ask them questions about something else entirely. We call it Not My Job. For more than 30 years, William Safire of the New York Times was the preeminent political pundit in journalism. He retired from that role 3 years ago, but has continued to write his weekly column on language. He's just put out the latest edition of Safire's Political Dictionary, which includes words and phrases from the 2008 presidential campaign. William Safire, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Gee, that's a lot of people listening in on a phone call.
I know, it's great.
Yeah, it's like the Bush administration.
Yeah. That goes back to the Nixon administration.
That's true. As a matter of fact, you mentioned that, of course, your start in politics was as a speechwriter for President Nixon, but prior to that, you arranged the famous Nixon-Khrushchev kitchen debate in Moscow. I guess it was like 1958. Am I getting that date right?
1959, and it was my kitchen.
Yes, that was the thing. That you arranged it not as a representative of Nixon, but...
Right, I was the press agent for the typical American house that was being shown in the American exhibition in Moscow. And Nixon and Khrushchev were walking around, and I managed to get them into my kitchen, and they had their debate there.
I love this, that you're not working for in the kitchen debate between Nixon and Khrushchev. You're not working for Nixon. You're not working for Khrushchev. You're working for the kitchen.
Exactly. And after it was over, Nixon came over to me and said, we really put that kitchen on the map for you, and how'd you like to work on my campaign?
So you did. You worked for Nixon pretty much through the 60s. Through, you left office before he did, if I'm not mistaken.
Just in the nick of time.
In the nick of time. Now, you've written fondly about him, particularly as a political mind over the years. I mean, as you know, President Nixon doesn't have maybe the best reputation these days. Tell us something you knew about him that we don't know.
Well, he was a great man for a comeback. And he came back after being defeated twice in California and after the Nixon-Kennedy campaign. And then after his downfall, made a comeback again. And he was the only one, I think, to have 6 books on the New York Times bestseller list.
Really?
And he wrote them himself.
Did he really?
How do you like that?
I like it fine. As a speechwriter, your career, you were mostly well-known not so much for what you wrote for the president, but what you wrote for the vice president, Spiro Agnew. And one of your famous contributions to political discourse, as you say in your own dictionary, was his immortal phrase, nattering nabobs of negativism.
Hey, you got the pronunciation of nabobs correct.
Thank you.
Very few people do that. They all say nabobs, and they're wrong.
No. Apparently, you meant that as a joke, this kind of elaborate alliteration. It wasn't the only alliteration you gave him in that speech.
Well, Nixon loaned a few of his speechwriters, like Pat Buchanan and Bryce Harlow and myself, to Agnew for the midterm campaign in 1970, and told us, go out there and crack the elitists. And I submitted a couple of alliterative phrases, because alliteration kind of goes in politics. And I gave 2 to Vice President Agnew. One was the nattering nabobs of negativism. And the other one...
He was describing the media and the elites in the East Coast.
Well, that we were describing the defeatists, the
right.
Prophets of gloom and doom, as
right.
Eisenhower once said. And then I also gave him the hopeless, hysterical hypochondriacs of history.
I don't think that one took off.
No,
no, it didn't take off because there was an objection from the 4-H clubs.
And justifiably so.
One. Now you went off, you left the Nixon White House, you became a conservative op-ed writer for the New York Times.
Right, I was the resident right winger there.
Yes. And did they always make you sit by yourself at the company picnics, or were you well?
It was a little lonely there for a while, but then I did go to a picnic, and one of the kids for one of the reporters fell in the pool, and my wife, who was standing next to me, pushed me into the pool fully clothed, and so I fished the kid out, and we both came out dripping, and all of a sudden I was a hero at the picnic. And
wait a minute. You're telling me that you went to the New York Times, you were a member of the Nixon White House, you were a conservative, they didn't trust you, and then you saved the life of a child in front of the collected staff so they had to accept you?
It was a big break.
Yeah.
And there are some who say that kid did not fall in the pool.
I was about to say.
I've looked at that film over and over and over.
You can see him go back into the left. Back into the left.
I think there's a third sapphire at the picnic table.
G. Gordon Liddy pushed the kid.
That's amazing. I had not heard that. That's a great story. Well, William Sapphire, it is a pleasure to have you here with us. We have asked you here to play a game that this week we are calling
You're Above the Law, Hard to Kill, Marked for Death, and Out for Justice.
As I'm sure you know, those were the first four films starring action hero, auteur, and martial arts master Steven Seagal. No relation.
The guy with the hair in the back.
The guy with the hair, yeah. Mr. Seagal has finally received his due, not an Oscar, not yet, but a scholarly book devoted to his oeuvre titled Seagalology, A Study of the Ass-Kicking Films of Steven Seagal. So we're going to ask you three questions about Mr. Seagal. If you answer two correctly, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is William Sapphire playing for?
He is playing for Aaron Schubel of San Diego, California.
First question. You ready to do this?
You fire away.
All right. First question. Despite his tough exterior, Mr. Seagal is actually a pretty sensitive guy. He was once spotted by a Warner Brothers executive weeping in his trailer. Why did Mr. Seagal say he was crying? Was it A, he was reading the most incredible script he'd ever read in his entire life, which he also just happened to have written? B, he was weeping over the sad fate of the live cultures in his strawberry banana yogurt? Or C, that scene where the mouse gets separated from his family in the animated movie Fievel Goes West always gets to him?
A.
You're going to go for A. He was
absolutely
reading the most incredible script. You're absolutely certain?
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Have you been moved to tears by your own work, sir?
Oh, of course. I completely identified with him in that.
All right. Mr. Seagal did write that script. It was never made into a film, unlike the other scripts he wrote for movies like Shadow Man, Into the Sun, Belly of the Beast. They all came out in theaters. Next question.
I just would love to have seen that moment. It's so sad. It's like he's a one-man army.
And then he puts his fist right through the guy. Yeah.
He improvises an explosive.
Next question. In addition to being a successful film actor, writer, and director, Mr. Seagal has claimed many other accomplishments, including which of these? A, he is an innovative gourmet chef, the recipient of a Medal of Honor from the French Cordon Bleu Cooking School. B, he is one of the people selected by an elite alien race, he says, to receive their communications on this earth. Or C, he is the reincarnation of an ancient Tibetan Buddhist holy monk.
Well, it can't be A because the previous one was A, and you wouldn't have two in a row.
You did really well in your SATs, didn't you, sir?
Funny thing, I used to play that game.
Right.
So I would say C.
You're going to go for C. He is the reincarnation of an ancient Tibetan Buddhist holy monk. You're right again. Steven Seagal was recognized by his teacher in Buddhism as a tulku, or reincarnation, of the, quote, 17th century hidden treasure revealer, Kyungbrag Drodre.
There's a Buddhist instructor who knows what side his bread is buttered on.
There you go, you know. So Mr. Seagal has got that going for him. All right. Let's see if you can do this perfectly. We'll turn our attention to the movies themselves. Which of these is a real bit of witty dialogue from a Steven Seagal movie? Is it A, bad guy, you can take that to the bank. Seagal, I'm going to take you to the bank, the blood bank. Is it B, love interest, wow, that was some move you put on that guy. Seagal, I've got another one I want to show you later. It's called the horizontal striking serpent. Or C, chief villain, you have defeated me at every turn. What is it that you want? Seagal, I want to feed you your own small intestine and hear you say, yum.
Well, let's see. We had an A and a C. So I'll pick B.
You're going to pick B out of pure pattern recognition. That's all you're using here. You can pick. No, I'm afraid the answer was A, the immortal blood bank exchange. It takes place in the movie Hard to Kill from 1990, as I'm sure you, sir, remember. So, Carl, how did William Sapphire do in our show?
Well enough, Peter. He had two correct answers, so he wins for Aaron Schubel.
Congratulations, sir. Well done.
Well, I'm delighted.
William Sapphire is a veteran columnist for the New York Times. You can read his column on language every Sunday in the magazine. He has also come out with an updated version of his classic, Sapphire's Political Dictionary, now from Oxford Press. William Sapphire, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great pleasure.